common again. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. We're live here on Tuesday, December the 19th, 2017. 24 hours into our 34-hour broadcast, I'm David Knight. We're going to start with the news here, but of course, later in the broadcast, we're going to be talking to Sybelle Edmonds about a figure that many of you probably don't know about, but should. This is a guy that is supported by both the left and the right. Unlike Soros, who is typically hanging out on the left, and people on the right understand about George Soros and his efforts to overthrow areas, this individual is supported by politicians on both the left and the right. He's an imam, and he's getting nearly a $1 billion now in your money to educate your children. How do you feel about that? A radical Islamic cleric brought here by the deep state, supported by politicians of both the left and the right, being given nearly $1 billion in subsidies for charter schools. So we're going to talk to Sybelle Edmonds. She's going to give us a breakdown on that. We'll also be talking to Matt Bracken about the deep state, and we'll be talking to Roger Stone about what's happening in Washington. Let's take a quick look at the news here. We have Santa and Christmas trees being pointed out by the University of Minnesota. And of course, they're equal on this. They also come after all Jewish symbols for Hanukkah as well. Menorahs with the colors blue and white are described as not appropriate. Anything that has to do with Santa, anything that has to do with Christmas trees, the colors red and green are examples that are listed as inappropriate religious iconography, okay? We have to respect religious diversity, says the University of Missouri. And I'm sure that they respect and celebrate Ramadan. This is one of the reasons, folks, that university support is plummeting in the general public, especially with Republicans and with Democrats who make less than $75,000 a year. It is the political correctness that they're using to try to control people. And here's another example of this. Over the weekend, we had a CNN political contributor, Hillary Rosen, was triggered by looking at a guy who was wearing a bacon suit at a basketball game between Georgetown and Syracuse. And she put out not one, but two tweets about this. First, she said, this is a Georgetown Hoyas fan anti-Semitic smear because he's wearing a bacon suit to the Syracuse team. Now, I don't know why she would think that that was anti-Semitic. I mean, perhaps she's maybe Jewish. So it offended her to see somebody dressed in bacon. It turns out, though, that she was so upset that she taunted him with a second tweet after the other team won. And his name was actually Michael Bacon. He spells it B-A-K-O-N, I'm sorry, A-N, and not the way that the actual bacon is. So it was a pun. It was a joke about who he was. And she just immediately jumped in because she's a CNN political contributor. That's where she lives. She lives in the hatred of political correctness. And so she puts this tweet out about that. And I wonder what she would say about Kevin Bacon, who actually spells his name B-A-C-O-N. I mean, is she ever accused Kevin Bacon of being anti-Semitic? 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. Well, here we have just 1 degree of political correctness from a CNN political contributor. And the hatred, I think, that you have to see, the hatred and intolerance that lies there. Now, we've got a couple of articles about what is happening in Europe. We have a clip from Nigel Farage. Yesterday, Donald Trump talked about the national security threat to the United States, and he correctly pointed out that it is not climate change, as Barack Obama had said. Barack Obama had said that the important thing facing us now as a national security threat is climate change. No, Trump said the real threat to our national security is economics and especially open borders. So we're going to tell you what's happening in Europe. We're going to tell you what President Trump said in his national security speech. And we'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm David Knight. We're now entering the final 10 hours of our 34-hour live broadcast here at InfoWars. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
the InfoWars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight on this Tuesday, December the 19th, 2017. President Trump gave a speech yesterday about national security. He rearranged the priorities for this country, understanding what they are, unlike Barack Obama. There was an article a couple of days ago, it's on Drudge Report, What's Up With That? Put the article out, anticipating what was going to happen, because, of course, these speeches, the elements of them are released in advance prior to the president making the speech. And what they said, Anthony Watts, what he said was the Trump administration will reverse course from previous Obama administration policy, eliminating climate change from a list of national security threats. And that did happen yesterday. And this is part of what the draft of the speech that was made yesterday said. U.S. leadership is indispensable to countering an anti-growth energy agenda that is detrimental to the U.S. economic and energy security interests, given future global energy demand. Much of the developing world will require fossil fuels as well as other forms of energy to power their economies and lift their people out of poverty. Now, contrast that to what Obama had to say. And, of course, he has a cartoon in that article. Pull up the cartoon in that article for people. And you got a couple of guys on a Coast Guard ship. And one of them says, men, Obama says climate change is an immediate threat to our national security. So if the ocean level rises, shoot it. You know what? Obama was actually right about some of this, because what he said was, in some ways, climate change is akin to the problem of terrorism and ISIL. He always called it ISIL instead of ISIS. I don't know why he would do that. I'm sure there was some kind of a politically correct thing there. The Levant. He said that in Paris in 2015. I would say that I would agree with President Obama, former President Obama, that climate change, in terms of its threat to us, is very much like terrorism and ISIL. And I'll tell you why he's right. Because we have now learned, and even mainstream media is talking about the fact, that Obama gave Hezbollah a pass. They had metastasized into a drug cartel besides being a terrorist group. And understand, we talk about terrorism, we talk about drug cartels, they kind of mix together. You kind of can't tell where one begins and the other ends. It's kind of like the Uniparty in Washington, D.C. and CNN, or most of the media. You can't tell where one ends and the other begins, or the FBI. And we'll talk about that in the next segment. But he was right in the sense that, like terrorism, like ISIS, it is a problem that he created, And then he uses it as leverage to control us. Climate change is something that they created, just like this Russian gate red herring that they put out there. And then they try to use that as leverage to control us. It's a fake story. And that's exactly what it was. So I would agree with Obama that it was very much like his ISIS problem and his terrorism problem. And as you pointed out yesterday, you've got Wired Magazine, you've got mainstream media all over the place talking about now the incontrovertible evidence that we were supplying arms to ISIS. And when President Trump stopped the CIA arming of ISIS in July, he said, I'm still going to give, we're still going to put the military in there, we're going to wrap these guys up, we're going to stop arming our enemies, and maybe banning John McCain from going there and talking to them and telling them what our strategy was. It didn't take very long to wrap up that band of scum once we stopped arming them. And, of course, that's what they were doing. And so what President Trump had to say, let's give you a clip of this. He identified the real problems. First of all, he said it is economics. And we've had other generals tell us, look, our strong economy is essential to our survival. Having access to cheap energy is essential to our survival. And there's something else that President Trump reminded us yesterday of in his national security speech. Let's run video clip 4.
First, we must protect the American people, the homeland, and our great American way of life. This strategy recognizes that we cannot secure a nation if we do not secure our borders. So for the first time ever, American strategy now includes a serious plan to defend our homeland. It calls for the construction of a wall on our southern border, ending chain migration and the horrible visa and lottery programs, closing loopholes that undermine enforcement, and strongly supporting our Border Patrol agents, ICE officers, and Homeland Security personnel.
There you go. He's got a new idea. Build a wall. Yeah, he's absolutely right. And you're not going to hear the people in New York, even though they've been borne the brunt of two terror attacks of individuals who are brought in here through the diversity visa lottery program and through chain migration, even though you have individuals, even other illegal aliens, other foreign citizens criminally trespassing here who came here to escape the violence and the poverty that they had in Central America and Mexico. They were followed here by MS-13, followed them in, and are now massacring many Hispanic kids, many of them illegals, many of them dreamers even, in Long Island. But you're not going to hear the people in New York applauding President Trump. They would not applaud him for anything, even if he saves them from this plague that has been unleashed on our country. And it's been unleashed in Europe as well. French cities, reports RT, are overwhelmed by refugee flow, and the government must step in urgently. These are mayors of seven major French cities say they have been backed up against a wall. Against a wall. See, we are either going to control our borders, and that is an issue of national security. Remember, Ron Paul, years ago, was saying, why do we have troops in virtually every country in the world providing security for them, but we cannot secure our borders? It is an issue of national security. It should be the primary issue of national security. Let's not allow everyone to come in. If you have open borders, then even if peaceful economic refugees are coming in, and we have to control that because we cannot sustain an indeterminate number of people coming into this country. But even the people who are coming in peacefully because they want economic improvement, they will be followed in by violent criminals, by terrorists, by drug cartels, if we do not have control of the border. And so that is the most important thing that we could do for national security. President Trump was absolutely right. And Ron Paul said that years ago. Let's bring the troops home from all these. Now, he's not suggesting, President Trump, unfortunately, is not suggesting bringing the troops home from all the different places that the American Empire has stationed them as triggers for international war. To draw us into a war, that would be even better. But at the very least, let's protect our borders. Can we not do that? Because if we look at what happens in France, they are backed up against the wall by an unending influx of refugees, is what they're saying. A steady and increasing number of people. If you have a massive sea of people coming in and you have absolutely no control of it, no say in it, it is an invasion. So it is an issue of national security. In Germany, Angela Merkel is now talking about bribing some of these people that she bribed to come in. She's now talking about bribing them to go home. Germany is asking, should we give them up to 1,000 euros, families up to 3,000 euros, that'd be $3,540, to cover rent and resettlement cost back to their home country. Merkel's government, as some of her critics are saying, is trying to bribe its way out of a tricky situation that she created. That she created, and that she has cost her dearly in the political landscape there in terms of loss of support. And, of course, as we typically see in Sweden, we see yet again another example of the police trying to cover up massive gang rapes from immigrants coming in there. There is not much hope left for Europe, but especially not for Sweden. They have embraced this. They are suicidal. I mean, it's always been kind of been a joke in the Woody Allen movies or the Ingrid Bergman movies of the Swedes who just kind of sat there and stared at each other across the table and eventually commit suicide. This is what they're doing as a nation. It is suicidal what they're doing as a nation in Sweden. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
Warner Brothers production. starring Ephraim Zimbalist Jr.
as Robert Mueller.
Also starring Philip Abbott
as Andrew McCabe.
Stephen Brooks
as Peter Strzok.
Ruth Roman
as the attorney mistress.
Gene Hackman
as James Comey.
Phyllis Love
as Sally Yates.
Tonight's episode, The Courier
of the DNC. Remember that program? The FBI, starring Ephraim Zimbalist Jr.? That was a massive propaganda piece by the master of propaganda, J. Edgar Hoover, to build the FBI's image, just as he was always posing with a machine gun when he didn't actually use the machine gun, to improve his image, as he was a cross-dresser and a homosexual, then persecuting and driving homosexuals out of the FBI. Because that's always the way that it works, isn't it? It's always the closeted homosexuals who are most oppressive about other homosexuals. And that was J. Edgar Hoover. J. Edgar Hoover. And so the question is, as we look at this soap opera, you know, I'm waiting to see that real episode that I just introduced there, you know. So-and-so as Robert Mueller, Andrew McCabe. I mean, this thing really has turned into a soap opera of intrigue and corruption. And it's this little nest of actors that are in Washington, D.C., this incestuous little group that, of course, you're not part of, as George Carlin would say, this little group that is like a Dickens novel, as I've said before, where they're all interconnected, all related to each other, and all emailing each other about how Hillary Clinton just has to win. Now, we got to have this Russia thing, this Russiagate, this Russian red herring. We got to have that as insurance in case President Trump wins, because we're going to take this election away from the American people. That's your FBI. That's the corruption at the FBI, the corruption at the top that has always, always been there. Always been there. There's an article that came out yesterday on Zero Hedge from Scott McPherson, Future of Freedom Foundation. Is the FBI an enemy of freedom? You know, we had one last week where somebody on Fox News said that the FBI is America's secret police. Well, yeah, it's pretty obvious, isn't it? But PolitiFact said, no, that's not the case. They called it a pants-on-fire lie. And we talked about that, how, actually, it is, and always has been, America's secret police. And now the question is the FBI an enemy of freedom? And as Scott McPherson points out, he says, former FBI Special Agent Clint Watts has responded to tweets from President Trump that were critical of the FBI by branding the president, quote, an enemy of the state. So he says the president is an enemy of the state, kind of like Peter Strzok and his attorney mistress were emailing each other back and forth as he was working to take apart the Trump transition team to get process crimes on them. They're enemy of the state. Public enemy number one is President Trump, and I'm going to take him down. I have the power to save this country by taking down President Trump. And so it's still going out there. We got Special Agent Clint Watts now calling the president an enemy of the state. He says Trump's tweets will, quote, sow doubt and hurt the ability of the FBI. So he is an enemy of the state whenever he is pushing against the FBI in that way. Because you see, the FBI is the government. It's the deep state that is the government. It's the FBI, the CIA, the NSA, those people. They are the government. You better realize this and do something about it. Because that's where we are. That's the reality that people are gradually starting to wake up to. And I've been saying this for a long time. The real threat to this country is the collusion of law enforcement and the surveillance state to create what William Binney, when he was a guest on this program, said they are the Praetorian Guard. And if you remember history, it was the Praetorian Guard who was originally set up to protect the emperor, to protect Caesar. And then they started picking who Caesar was going to be because they were the government. And that's what this guy is saying. He says, if you're an enemy of the FBI, you are an enemy of the state. Well, he's pretty close to that, an enemy of the deep state. That's right. An enemy of the deep state. What President Trump did was he went to the FBI Academy and he said, we're going to get you on the track to do the things that the American people want done by federal law enforcement instead of becoming this politicized secret police, which your leaders have been doing this in the last couple of years. Everybody has realized it. Most people didn't realize it when J. Edgar Hoover was doing it. He was out there parading around catching bank robbers and people who were selling alcohol, you know, that horrendous crime of selling alcohol that we had going on, that created prohibition. He was out there parading around doing that, and everybody was kind of happy with it, creating programs like the FBI with Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. Great PR, but they didn't realize what he was doing behind the scenes. Now we realize what the FBI is doing behind the scenes, and it is in tatters. And so that's why President Trump went to the rank and file, saying, we're going to fix this up. We're going to reform this institution. We're going to purge the politicized criminals that comprise the deep state that are your leadership. We're going to get rid of them. And Scott McPherson goes on to say, with the possible exception of the BATF, it would be hard to imagine an entity within the federal government that is more out of control and in need of, dare I say it, even abolition. Yeah, do we even need to have an FBI? I mean, that's where I would disagree with President Trump on this. But at least he's going to try to get in somebody that is not corrupt by this. I would just say that power corrupts, and they have too much power. And so as an institution, it is something that is doomed to fail. It is something we never had for the first couple hundred years of this republic. But as the republic disappeared and we became an empire, that's when they brought them in the early 20th century. For its entire existence, he says, since 1909, the FBI served as a strong arm of the federal government. Created in 1909 as the Bureau of Investigation, no one's life, liberty, or property has been safe since. Ostensibly created to investigate anarchists, bootleggers, kidnappers, bank robbers, crimes on federal property, and later the KKK, the FBI would soon find its true calling, political repression, personal destruction, and terror. And just remember, as Judge Napolitano has pointed out, most of the terror events that we've had in the United States have been staged by the FBI as a scam, as a trick. And then we have a couple of them that got out of hand. In Garland, Texas, they actually accompanied the guy who shot a security guard, and now he's suing them for $8 million, saying, what are you doing? You're encouraging these people. You're equipping them. You're even following them. You didn't stop them. We had to stop them in Garland, Texas. So anyway, as he points out, communists real and imagined were the first ones to find themselves on the FBI's ominous glare. But World War II, they had an opportunity to do something real, didn't they? But what did they do? Said, they could have investigated acts of espionage. They could have found spies who were here. But instead, they focused more on the mass arrest of innocent Japanese Americans, and they did warrantless searches of their property. And he talks about J. Edgar Hoover, how much he disliked civil rights leaders, his FBI COINTEL program that we've talked about. Political assassinations of people in the Black Panther Party. Assassinations of people who are protesters, not even protesters. We've had FBI snipers after protesters. Just go back to the killing of Randy Weaver's wife by a member of the hostage rescue team, shooting her at point-blank range, right between the eyes, while she was holding a child in her arms. That's the FBI. Used a tank to attack the Branch Davidian complex. That's where we are with the deep state. That's why we should put it on the table. I'll tell you a little bit more about the FBI and their entrapment tactics when we come back. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
In Texas, it's David Knight. Keep on
dying. Welcome back. I'm David Knight on this Tuesday, December the 18th, 2017. As I was pointing out, is the FBI the enemy of the state, or is President Trump? An FBI agent has tweeted out that President Trump is the enemy because he criticizes the FBI leadership. The question is, do we need the FBI? Should we even have the FBI if their long history of criminal actions? We're talking about political assassinations, COINTELPRO, the Palmer raids that split the political landscape. Used to be that liberals, when people talk about being a classical liberal, it means that they support freedom. And it used to be that liberals supported both civil liberties and economic freedoms. What happened to that? Well, that was the Palmer raids. That's where J. Edgar Hoover first put himself on the map in Washington, D.C., with the notorious Palmer raids that were carried out against anarchists and communists and so forth. But it was the Palmer raids and the involvement in World War I that split liberals into two groups. The people who were there for civil liberties, they went to the left, became more Marxist in their orientation, got rid of economic liberty, Because so many of the people who are supporting economic freedom were big business, and that's where the military-industrial complex really started to find its footing there in that war. But it was a very obvious division. And so the division between people who had supported economic liberty but were part of the military-industrial complex pushing for our involvement in World War I, that caused a backlash with those who opposed our involvement in World War I and the violations of civil liberties that were being created by J. Edgar Hoover. And so it split. And unfortunately, they took the name liberal with them when they left. So they got custody of the name in that divorce. And so that's why many of us coined the term libertarian, to try to talk about people who are interested in both aspects of liberty. But that created that divorce, that separation there. He was the wedge with his violation of civil liberties. From the very beginning, J. Edgar Hoover was the wedge that created that division in our political landscape that we still talk about as being the left and the right, pushing many people who supported individual freedom, pushing them into the arms of the Marxists by his violations of civil liberties. Was it enough when we saw the movement against the American Indian movement, people like Russell Means and others, or other people like Randy Weaver, that they set up and entrapped and murdered members of his family? And that was found, the jury found in his favor in that particular case. Or as we watched the Branch Davidian complex being burned down. How long do we have to go before we see this? Is it enough now that they're coming after the president? That they're now coming after the political landscape? Have you had enough of this? I had enough a long time ago. Believe me, I had enough. I am sick to death of this deep state. Sick to death of it. And so, yes, it is America's secret police. It does have a long history of this. And, you know, when we talked about this article, also laying out the history of it, saying that, no, it's PolitiFact that has its pants on fire when it says that the FBI is not America's secret police. Always has been. Always has been. It's just that the secret police now and the surveillance state are not just coming after criminals. They're coming after interesting people, as Michael Hayden said. I mean, he's never been the FBI. He was the CIA, the NSA. But they're all connected in this. It is what we call the deep state. So, as they pointed out in this PolitiFact, the PolitiFact said that this is absolutely not true. They are not a secret police. They said they are run by laws, not by whims. And I would say, yeah, laws like Section 1001 of Title 18. 1001 of Title 18. You know, that is the non-crime of lying to the FBI, as Alana Mercer points out in the Mises Institute. So it's an easy way for the government to create crimes and criminality when there is none. That's the way they got Martha Stewart. She was not engaged in insider trading. She lied to the FBI. That's the way they came after Michael Flynn as part of their FBI coup. FBI coup. And she points out this kind of entrapment, the criminalization of the act of lying to the government in Flynn's case about a non-crime, is facilitated under the unconstitutional Section 1001 of Title 18 in the U.S. Code. It makes it an offense to make a materially false statement to a federal official. And listen to this, even when you're not under oath. How did they get Michael Flynn? Michael Flynn, we'd like to talk to you a little bit here. I'd like to ask you one or two questions here. They didn't come in and make this. He was absolutely surprised. He didn't know it was a deposition. They didn't put him under oath. They just informally asked him a couple of questions, you know. What's your favorite color? Blue. No, red. Oh, gotcha. Okay. Remember when I played that clip from Monty Python? The Bridge of Doom and Death, you know, you go plummeting off because you give him the wrong answer. You don't even know that you are, that they're scoping you out for this. But you say something to them, unless you're Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama or Loretta Lynch or some of these other people that are too important to do anything to them. But even when you're not under oath, that's why we say never, ever, never talk to the FBI. Never talk to the FBI. Let me repeat that. Never talk to the FBI. You let your lawyer talk to them and you make it formal. Because believe me, they've got a secret agenda up their sleeve, and they've got a special little Section 1001 of Title 18, which they've seen them now use it against the most interesting and powerful people that they don't like. There's no crime there, except by the FBI. That's where the crime is, folks. Let's understand where the crime is. Let's understand where the investigation needs to go. And I'm not even talking about the collusion with Hillary Clinton and the Clinton Foundation and the Uranium One that Robert Mueller, Rod Rosenstein, James Comey, Loretta Lynch, all these people have their hands dirty in that. They ought to be investigated for that. But let's talk about the crime of setting people up and taking them down. That's the real collusion. The real collusion is between the DNC and the FBI. That's where the real collusion is. That's where you should be concerned about. Let's play this clip from Alan Dershowitz talking about Bob Mueller playing into Trump's hands.
Possibility he would have it within his authority. It would be foolish to do. He has Mueller in a good position now. A lot of the American public think he's biased against Trump, and that may lead him, because he cares so much about his reputation, to lean over backwards in favor of Trump. So if I were Trump, I wouldn't try to fire him. I would continue to keep the pressure on and raise issues about the emails, etc. Now, Mueller's playing into his hands. Mueller was really foolish in not seeking warrants for those emails. It's a close question, but why not seek the warrant? Getting warrants is like getting candy at Christmas. It's very easy to get, and not getting the warrant gives the defense an opportunity to challenge it in court.
Well, okay, there's an interesting...
Okay, so that was interesting. That was an interesting quote right there at the end. You hear that? He said, why not seek a warrant? Getting a warrant is like getting candy at Christmas or getting an indictment, right? It's very easy to get an indictment. It's no problem getting a warrant. To get a warrant, you go before a judge. There's nobody there saying, arguing for the other side. Just go to the judge and say, hey, I've got this, I've got this, I've got this. I've got this dirty dossier that Hillary Clinton paid somebody $1 million to write. Let's use that to... get information on these people. It's very easy to do that. Very easy to do that. Of course, getting a warrant that is based on filthy fiction is a way to contaminate your entire investigation. The fruit of a poison tree is poison fruit, and it will be overturned based on that eventually if justice prevails. But it wasn't foolish. I disagree with Alan Dershowitz on that. It wasn't foolish. It was arrogant. It was arrogant, and it was the way that they do business all the time. And that tells you a great deal about the mindset of the former director of the FBI, Bob Mueller, that the establishment thinks can do no wrong. He doesn't need to get no stinking warrant. I don't need no stinking badges, right? That's the arrogance of these people. They don't care what the law is, and they, even more importantly, they don't care what the Constitution is. Remember Michael Hayden saying, I didn't need Section 200 and whatever. I had a direct order from the president. So he and the president decide what will happen, just as Bob Mueller decides what will happen. He doesn't need no stinking warrant. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. Welcome back. I'm David Knight on this December the 19th, 2017, part of our 34-hour Christmas broadcast and part of our massive Christmas savings that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. That's how we fund our operation. That's how we stay independent of the big corporations, the big foundations that would take us over. And we have some massive specials on some of our most popular products right now. We have Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix, 50% off. That's our multivitamin, multi-mineral formula. You can get all your nutrition there from vitamins and minerals that are essential in a liquid format. It tastes great, and of course, you can flavor it to taste any way you want. You don't have to take a lot of pills to get all those multivitamins and multi-minerals. Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix, now 50% off. Many other products that are very popular at InfoWars are now 50% off as well. Knockout, our all-natural sleep aid. Survival Shield, X2 Nascent Iodine, both of those 50% off. Super Male Vitality, 50% off. Prostaguard, 50% off. We also have a couple of new products, Cell Force and Alpha Power. Both of those are 50% off their introductory price. And we have some of our other popular products like Brain Force, Silver Bullet, our colloidal silver, InfoWars, Life Select Survival Food. Those are also on sale at InfoWarsStore.com. So check out the sales and the savings that you can find at InfoWarsStore.com, and we really do appreciate your support, especially at this time of year. Let's go back to what we see here with the corruption of the deep state. We're just talking about the corruption of the FBI. And, you know, it's very difficult for people when we see an institution that's been around just for a couple of years. Remember, Ronald Reagan campaigned on getting rid of the Federal Department of Education. The federal government has no legitimate constitutional role in education. None whatsoever. None at all. And so when Jimmy Carter created it, one of the things that Ronald Reagan campaigned on was to abolish it. And even though it was less than 4 years old, he didn't. Instead, it stayed there. And after 8 years of Ronald Reagan, it was far larger than it had, than it was when he took office. Same thing is now perhaps going to happen with this Consumer Financial Protection Board. It should be eradicated, but it is rapidly metastasizing. But just imagine when we got these institutions that have been around for 100 years, institutions like the Federal Reserve, institutions like the IRS, institutions like the FBI. They've been around for a very long time. It's difficult for people to imagine an America without those institutions, no matter how criminal and oppressive and dictatorial and enslaving and intriguing they become. No matter how much they are used against us, no matter how much they are used to manipulate the political system, we just can't imagine life without the Federal Reserve, the IRS, or the FBI, some of these other agencies. They're just part of the landscape here in America. But you need to imagine it. Imagine it. Imagine freedom. Go back and read Alexis de Tocqueville's Democracy in America. Yes, I know we have different technology today, but people are the same. People are the same, and we can recapture that. We need to have a massive reformation, a spiritual reformation first, and that's going to drive a reformation of government. That's what gave us the republic in the first place. But here's an example of how corrupt this is right now. EPA Chief Scott Pruitt, and we've already reported on this before, how he has brought in security. He's the first time we've had an EPA administrator to have 24-hour security detail, but he's done other things as well. He paid nearly $25,000, reports The Hill, for a secure phone booth in his office, even though there was an existing secure compartmentalized information facility elsewhere in the building. You know, the cone of silence from Get Smart, right? No, look, let's understand, Scott Pruitt is not a fool. This is not his first rodeo. And he knows that they are out to get him in Washington. They're out to entrap him any way that they can. And they want to know what his plans are. This is the atmosphere of intrigue that exists in Washington. What does this tell you about what a pit of vipers that place has become? Rome on the Potomac doesn't even begin to describe this place. Rome was never never any more morally corrupt than what we have there now. But now we've added all of this surveillance technology. And so when you look at this, it's like, well, he already had, he spent $25,000 for a secure phone booth. But they already had this secure facility. Oh, really? You think it was secure? Yeah, kind of like the Russian embassy, the American embassy in Russia, where they built this thing. And when they moved in, they found it was loaded with bugs. Remember that back during the Cold War? They found the thing was so incredibly bugged. That's what Scott Pruitt understands Washington has become. The deep state surveilling everything that he does. And he even paid $3,000 in March to Edwin Steinmetz Associates to do a sweep for bugs, for covert illegal surveillance devices in his offices. That's the atmosphere that he knows exists in Washington. He's smart to do that. But it is a reflection of the corruption that this deep state, the surveillance state, has done, how politicized it has become, and how dangerous it is. And we should all understand that they're after us as well. Not so much as individuals. I mean, if you speak out against them, I'm sure that they've got my stuff bugged. I'm sure if you speak out, they'll bug you as well. So we need to all hang together. But they want to know what the general public knows. And so that's why they have the tools to do metadata. That they continually, oh, that's just metadata. We can't tell anything from that. They can tell more from metadata looking at the crowds than they can anything else. They can put out a false story about Russian collusion, and then they can see how it is being accepted by the general public, and that allows them to fine-tune their propaganda for acceptance. That is essential to what they do. That's one of the reasons why geospatial intelligence has been one of the fastest growing aspect of the surveillance state. But I want to give you another example of this, and this is in Wisconsin. This was from the Weekly Standard. It was on the Drudge Report a couple of days ago. Wisconsin, the surveillance state. And this is something they call the John Doe scandal. Now, interestingly enough, this began when Scott Walker was a Milwaukee County executive. And in 2010, before he became governor of Wisconsin, he was running for governor. He wanted to investigate some money that had gone missing from his own office. So a legitimate purpose for an investigation. Just as you have legitimate purposes for, you could argue, for a federal investigation bureau for crimes across state lines. And there then becomes an issue of jurisdiction between the different states. So you could say, yeah, there's a legitimate use for some kind of a federal bureau of investigation. But very quickly, it metastasizes into something else. This example here in Wisconsin is a small microcosm of what has happened with the FBI over the last century. So they have a John Doe investigation. Has now become a fixture of Wisconsin politics and courts for more than half a decade now. And they say that even though he was investigating it for missing money in his own office, it metastasized into a series of wide-ranging witch hunts used to harass and intimidate conservatives. So here's a guy running for office as a conservative. He's got money missing in his department. He starts an investigation of it, and then it turns into, takes on a life of its own and starts coming after conservatives like him even, okay? It turns against him. Is this not what we have seen in Washington? Isn't this what we now have? I say in both the 2012 recall election to unseat Governor Walker and the 2014 gubernatorial race, Democrats frequently cited the investigations as evidence of his quote-unquote corruption. So what happens is we get these situations, and they start to metastasize. And whether he's running it or somebody else is running it, it becomes a weapon of political oppression. The problem is, as we have seen with individual cops on the beat, when you bring them in to solve a problem, for instance, the police and brutality and shootings and so forth, they have to be held to a higher standard. They have to be held to a very high standard because the potential for abuse is so high. And that's why we need to seriously look at the arrogance of the FBI. Not only the arrogance, as I just pointed out, Alan Dershowitz saying, why wouldn't Bob Mueller get a search warrant? That may undo his entire investigation. It's such an easy thing to do. It's just simply a pro forma formality, just to go in there and say, hey, I'd like to have a search warrant. Sure, yeah. Hey, Bob, how you doing? How was the golf game the other day, says the judge, and just hands him a search warrant. Because it's so easy, especially when you're Bob Mueller of the FBI. You just walk in and get it, just on your own cognizance. But he is so arrogant that he doesn't bother to do that. And that arrogance must be their undoing, because it will be our undoing if we don't, if we suffer it, if we allow this to continue, saying that Trump is an enemy of the state. They're the enemy of the state. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
Universal deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight on this Tuesday, December the 19th, 2017. As I was just saying, we have an FBI that has become thoroughly politicized. One of the reasons, we have to understand, one of the reasons why they are going all in on this is because we have a lot of people involved in the deep state who are supplying ISIS and other terrorists. Their necks are in the news. And this is now in the news. Now, that's how they got their necks in the noose. We've got Politico, of all people, attacking Obama, saying he let Hezbollah off the hook so he could get his Iranian deal through. We've got Wired Magazine going through and talking about how they did the forensics to trace ISIS's weapons back to the U.S. and so on. This is a very big turning when liberal mainstream media is talking about these things. These guys have got their necks on the line, and they're going to do everything they can to survive. And as we were talking yesterday to Matt Shea about what's going on in the Bundy Ranch trial, we have to understand there are people inside the BLM and other parts of the government that have their necks in the noose for criminal action as well. And this is something that needs to be exposed. They went the distance to try to keep this covered up. Now, we reported on this last week. It was Sherry Duvalli with Redoubt News who broke this information. We had her on immediately. We also had Matt Shea on with some more documents that came out over the weekend. And now this is being picked up by the mainstream media. We got the Wall Street Journal picking this up. The Wall Street Journal is now, listen to this, headlines: federal agents provoked the Nevada rancher standoff, says a memo. And then they talk about this memo. The Wall Street Journal starts out the story this way: federal agents provoked a showdown with Nevada rancher Cliven Bundy. Wow. That's coming from the Wall Street Journal. See, eventually the truth will come out. And it will be so obvious when it comes out from a whistleblower like Larry Wooten or others. It'll be so obvious that even the Wall Street Journal, even CNN will eventually report on this, because these are heinous crimes. And when you find out what happened, the details of what happened with the BLM, how they have abused their authority as the FBI, the NSA, the CIA, the IRS, all these different agencies, the EPA, for example. I mean, remember, it was the EPA that tried to get millions of dollars in fines, charging a welder who had an 8-acre farm. I wouldn't even call it a farm. It's 8 acres where his family lived. He had some livestock on there. He dug a little pond for his livestock to drink from and for his kids to swim in. He did all the state and local permits, but then the EPA got in. They said, we own all the waters of the United States. And they started levying fines against him of like $37,000 a day, because they say, we're the EPA. We don't have to follow the Constitution in terms of excessive fines, because we're coming after you for a regulation, for a rule. So it's not a law. It's not a law. If it was a law, we would have to obey the Constitution, they say. But it's just a civil violation, just like they can take your car, take your house, take your airplane, take your business, because they found a marijuana joint there. So they can use civil asset forfeiture, not criminal asset forfeiture. Criminal, they would have to charge you, find you guilty. But with civil, they don't even have to charge you with anything. They could just confiscate your property. That's why you have to understand how these criminals in Washington have perverted our system of government, have turned it upside down, have shredded the Constitution. And now we're seeing this. Now we've got Wall Street Journal. We've got the Daily Caller talking about this as well. We've got the Oregonian talking about it. Interesting quotes, you know, that came out. We talked about this with Matt Shea yesterday, talking about grinding Dave Bundy's face into the ground and having little bits of gravel stuck in his face. They were happy about that. You know, they arrested him. They roughed him up. They arrested him. They drove him all the way into Las Vegas, which is like, I don't know, it's like an hour and a half, 2-hour drive. Clark County is gigantic. Drove him all the way in there and just didn't put him in jail, didn't give him any charges, just left him there after they beat him up. They bragged about that. It was an amateurish carnival atmosphere, they wrote. It was worse than carnival. It was a very sick carnival.
You found it. It's the real news. From the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight on this Tuesday, December 19th, 2017. In the next segment, we'll be talking to Sibel Edmonds. And we'll be talking about a very interesting individual. She's with newsbud.com. We'll be talking about a very interesting individual that you should know about. You know about George Soros, but this guy is getting a lot of taxpayer money. He is an imam who may be educating your children. And so this is somebody that you need to know about. So Sabella will be joining us in the next segment. And before we get back to the news, I want to tell you a tale of two systems right here, since we've got our Dickensian intrigue in Washington. There's another Dickens story here. Tale of two systems here in a moment. Before we get to that, I just want to remind you about the massive Christmas savings that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. Today is the last day that we can guarantee delivery by Christmas. So, and we've got massive sales on many of our most popular items. We've got Brain Force on sale, Silver Bullet, our colloidal silver, InfoWars Life, Select Survival Food. That is storable for 25 years, made in America, non-GMO, resealable, some of the best packaging you're going to find. And, of course, made in America and non-GMO, that is on sale as well. And then we got 50% off on many products, things like Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix, our multivitamin formula, 50% off. Knockout, our all-natural sleep aid, 50% off. Survival Shield X2 Nascent Iodine, 50% off. Super Male Vitality and also Prostaguard, both 50% off. And we have 50% off our two new products, Cell Force and Alpha Power. So it's a great time to do something for yourself, do something for your family, prepare, get yourself something that's going to be healthy, that's going to actually make you feel better. Take a look at the products that we have, the many discounts that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. Remember, this is the last day that we can guarantee shipment by Christmas. So take advantage of those sales while they're there, and we really do appreciate your support. Let's talk about a tale of two systems. You know, it was the best of systems. It was the worst of systems. Socialism versus capitalism, or free market enterprise. You know, we're looking at the fact that the New York Fed has now said we're raising expectations for growth to 4% here in America. And yet in Venezuela, where the Bernie Sandinistas, where the Marxist millennials want to, that they love the system of Marxism. It's very popular with millennials. I'll give you a couple of examples here in a moment. But let's take a look at the reality here. Because, you know, Dickens said it was the best of times, the worst of times. Well, eventually the socialist system runs out of time, doesn't it? It runs out of time when it runs out of other people's money, as Margaret Thatcher said. And as Yahoo is reporting, food and clothes for the poor and not so Merry Christmas for Venezuela. They say a one-legged panhandler burst into tears as a young man dressed as Santa Claus gave him food and clothing. It was a rare scene of holiday cheer in economically depressed socialist Marxist Venezuela. Millennials, this is your ghost of Christmas future if you want to go down this path. And the guy said, who's in a wheelchair, he said, sometimes we eat out of the garbage. But God always puts angels in our path. You are the angels of Christmas, he said. And then he started weeping. They said in Caracas, the capital of Venezuela, with no Christmas lights, no decorations this year because of the economic crisis. Why put up Christmas lights when you don't have electricity, right? Santa and his helpers handed out food and medicine, clothing, and some toys to children. You know, what's on your Christmas list, millennials? Are you anxiously awaiting food and medicine? No, you're probably looking at some luxury goods, aren't you? Because you don't understand what the system that you hate has given you. This is the system that you're moving towards here in Venezuela. That's your future if you keep going that way. Pointing out Venezuelans are enduring acute shortages of food and medicine, and inflation is forecast by the IMF to hit a staggering 2,349% in 2018. Yeah. Their inflation is going up faster than Bitcoin. How's that? Is that something you can relate to? They say, as they're looking at it, one guy says, hey, that Santa was hit by the crisis. Hey, Santa, are you doing the Maduro diet? What does that mean? That means that this is a skinny Santa Claus. And so they're joking. Are you on the diet of socialism? The socialist diet. Where you not only lose weight, you lose everything. All your possessions, all your weight. But we've got BuzzFeed editor, the science editor. I'm sure she thinks she's a full on with global warming. She said, all I want for Christmas is full communism now. And if you take a look at her, boy, she is the epitome of a snowflake there. And these are the people that we should be reading, right? Because they understand how life works. I don't think so. Harvard said, and this has been coming out last couple of weeks, millennials now are the biggest voting group in the U.S., and they are 2-1 Democrat, and they love socialism. They love communism, just like this BuzzFeed science editor. They love it. They prefer Democrats 65% to 33%. And they don't like Trump, and they are fearful about the future. I'm fearful about the future as well because of the millennials, because of their embrace of socialism, because the system that they are embracing leads to things like Venezuela, what is happening there. You know, Doug Casey had an op-ed piece, it was picked up by Zero Hedge on why millennials favor communism. And he was talking about the fact that a recent study from the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, it's a D.C.-based nonprofit. You know, the people who are the most rabidly anti-communist are the people who lived under it and escaped from it. Growing up in Florida, all the people who had escaped from Castro's communism, those Cubans who had come to Florida, boy, they hated communism. I learned a great deal from them. You can learn a great deal from people who escaped communism in the Eastern Bloc and got out. Boy, they have seen it. Half of millennials that surveyed would rather live in a socialist or communist country than a capitalist society. That's why they prefer Democrats 2-1, because the Democrats are up front in defending and plugging socialism. Republicans, capitalism and free market, not so much. The only thing that they offer us is crony capitalism, is basically what they offer. 22% of those surveyed had a favorable view of Karl Marx, even though they probably don't understand anything about him, while 13% viewed Joseph Stalin and Kim Jong-un as heroes. These are the people who hold the future in their hands. We should be very afraid of this. We have a lot of educational issues in front of us. We have to teach them about life, don't we? We got to start this very quickly because they have a vote that counts just as much as your vote. You know, it's interesting because in Russia, at the same time that this is happening, Doug Casey says, you know, the problem is the 18-year-old goes to school. They have been institutionalized their entire life. They have been taught by people who love big government. Teachers, for the most part, they've never gotten out of school. They went through school. They went right back around into the factory and started making clones for the government there. They haven't been out in the real world. And the 18-year-old who's been there from kindergarten through college, maybe graduate school, they don't know how the world works. They're just taking and it's their family. That's the way it was designed. It was designed to replace the family. It was designed to make them have relationships with their peers that are stronger than the relationships that they have with their parents or with their siblings. That's their true family. You know, in Russia, we frequently don't realize that they overthrew the communists. And there are many people in Russia who are trying to push that, trying to bury communism. They took down the statue of Felix Dzerzhinsky, the guy who ran the Cheka. You know, by the way, a great series of film that had Sam Neill in it. It was Riley, Ace of Spies. It'll give you a kind of interesting background of Felix Dzerzhinsky, the Cheka, the early days of the Russian Revolution. The guy that it's about, Sigmund Riley, he was in Fleming's template for James Bond, and it'll give you an idea of how BP was created as well. Very interesting series, very well produced. But now you've got people in some communists that still exist. They never go away. They still exist in Russia, and they want this statue of the guy who ran the secret police, Felix Dzerzhinsky. They want that statue back up. Isn't that amazing? When we were in China, they still had statues of Chairman Mao, even though he starved tens of millions of Chinese people. It's insane, isn't it? Stay with us. We'll be right back with Sabell Edmonds. Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and joining me now is Sabell Edmonds. Of course, most of you know Sabell. She was a language specialist for the FBI. She turned into a whistleblower when she saw serious acts of security breaches, cover-ups. She was retaliated against, fired, eventually gagged with retroactive classification. But she now operates as the founder, director, editor of Newsbud.com. Wouldn't have Sabell on because she was here in Austin recently. I think it was just last week, if I'm correct. They wanted to go to the Texas Capitol. Sabell Edmonds went there with some InfoWars reporters, as well as with Mark Hall, who did a documentary about charter schools. And of course, you may not know it, but there's an Islamic cleric who's been given refugee status in the Pennsylvania mountains, who runs a massive network of charter schools here in the United States, getting over $500 million in taxpayer money each year. And so you would think that there would be some more information about him than there really is. A lot of people know about George Soros. Nobody knows about Fethullah Gulen, but Sibel Edmonds knows a great deal about Fethullah Gulen. So we wanted to have her cover what they saw at the Austin Capitol, as well as fill in the blanks for this mysterious cleric. Thank you for joining us, Sibel.
Thank you, David. It's so good to be back. How long has it been since we had a show together?
It's been a long time. We've had scheduling conflicts that makes it difficult for us to do this. Tell us a little bit about this mysterious guy. You know, we've got all these congressmen and media politicians, academics, law enforcement, all these people who are taking junkets to Turkey paid for by this institution. They've got this massive network of charter schools in the United States. Who is this guy?
Sure. Firstly, let me qualify this network, this shady network, with a network of $50 billion, okay? $50 billion headquartered here in the United States as an Islamic, cult, because they are not even, their indoctrination, what they do around the world, whether it is the heroin transportation or money laundering or helping arming jihadis such as Chechens in Russia mainland. These have nothing to do with the religion Islam, but they have been using and twisting, and they have created this really radical cult. It started in Turkey, but it has spread to basically around the globe. They have a huge network in Central Asia, Caucasus. They have presence with madrasas in places like Afghanistan, in Indonesia. They have infiltrated governments around the world, and it's not only in Muslim nations, but in Europe, for example, in Albania. But their biggest presence currently, it's not even Turkey. It's here in the United States. They
That's
have more
thing.
Pocketed politicians here in this country than anywhere else in the world. So this man started as a radical cleric, and in 1980s, 1990s, he was issuing fatwa in Turkey. He wanted to bring Sharia laws in Turkey. He basically
Let's back up a little bit here for Americans here, because I think a lot of Americans don't really understand much about the history of Turkey. They don't understand the history about America, really, certainly not foreign countries. And so you had essentially a secular Turkish government there by Ataturk,
yes.
And then you have an Islamic movement that comes along, and Erdogan was also looking for a caliphate at the same time, but Fethullah Gulen was a student of one of the key sheikhs that was opposing Ataturk's secularism even prior to Erdogan coming in. So that's where he's coming from, opposing Islamic secularism that was what was happening in Turkey in the early part of the 20th century, opposing that from the very beginning.
Absolutely. And if you go and look at all the fatwas he issued in Turkey during those two decades, 80s and 90s, what he was saying was this. He was saying his method was less basically set up our own schools, madrasas, okay, for radical cult Islamism, okay, not mm-hmm. the general moderate Islam, and teach science as well, and English language and science, such as even computer science back then, because what we want to do is we want to have these tens of thousands of kids that we indoctrinate with these academic credentials, then we want to place them within the arteries of governments. And again, not only in Turkey, but all over the world. We want them to get jobs within police departments, within military institutions, and then rise, you know, among the ranks. And that way, we are looking at this long-term plan to take over not only Turkey, but to have this global movement, okay?
That's right, so a caliphate type of thing, yeah.
Absolutely. He was mm-hmm. indicted in Turkey, and he received jail time. And around 1997, 1998, he was about to be imprisoned in Turkey. This is during Bill Clinton's administration. At that point in the United States during Bill Clinton's administration and together with NATO. This is after the fall of the Soviet Union. There were these plannings, covert plannings, to change tactics. Because for half a century, we as NATO, U.S., we use communism, okay, as the justification to set up bases all around the world, to basically say, okay, here are the Russians, the Soviets, they are trying to do this. And in order to counter this, we have to spend this and go to this country, go to that country, create coups all over the world, etc.
Well, we had to have a boogeyman. Yeah, we had to have a boogeyman to justify the buildup.
That's right. 1991, you know, we had the Soviet Union collapse. Communism was basically gone. And we needed, as a nation, not that we as people of this nation needed that, because this was the time to say, great, all the trillions of dollars we were spending to fight the so-called communism, we can spend here at home, right? Build infrastructures, have some of these great high-speed trains they have all over the world, and we haven't caught up with them yet, right? Medical technology, healthcare, you know, for the Americans. No. We couldn't have done that. We wanted for all that expenditure to go into the covert operations again around the world, not only to stop the bases, close some of these bases that we had with the justification of the communism, but actually expand our bases. So we said, let's create extremist Islamic movements with terror operations that we create, we arm, we direct. Then we can point at them and say, look, we have to fight these guys. So we can spend trillions of dollars. And unlike the Soviet Union, it's not going to collapse, because with the Soviet Union, we could have declared the end of communism and the Soviet Union. But when you have these U.S.-created Al-Qaeda, ISIS, Al-Nusra...
And it's interesting, Sibel, just in the last couple of days, we have now seen mainstream media coming out. We got Wired Magazine. We got all these different organizations going out and saying, hey, look, we just figured out that the CIA was arming ISIS. And it's like, yeah, we've been telling you that for quite some time. So even they're realizing that now, they can't cover that up anymore. We've got to take a quick break here. But when we come back, we're going to tell you the basis for which he is expanding this. Of course, Sibel is pointing out this was part of the military-industrial complex needing to have a boogeyman, creating one, and that is how we got this guy here in the U.S. But we're going to tell you about these schools. They also visited the schools here. Texas is the largest center for the Fethullah Gulen network of schools here in the United States. $500 million worth of taxpayer money going to support these schools. Do you know where your taxpayer dollars are going, what they are supporting? Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You found it. It's The Real News with your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're talking to Sibel Edmonds. She was laying down the history of Turkey as it moved from a secular Islamic republic under Ataturk, and then the rise of religious extremists as supported by the West, because they needed a new enemy, the military-industrial complex did, after the fall of the Soviet Union. And so I want to read, before we go back to Sibel, I want to read from Fethullah Gulen, the individual we're talking about here, from his 1998 book, Prophet Muhammad as Commander. In it, he's saying that force has a very important place in obtaining desired results, so believers can't be indifferent to it, Islamic believers. He said, rather, they must be more advanced in science and technology than unbelievers, so that unbelievers are not allowed to use force for their selfish benefit. And he goes, this will be possible when Muslims equip themselves with a strong belief and righteousness in all their affairs, and also with scientific knowledge and the most sophisticated technology. So this is where we are going to go in this next segment here, talking about the massive network of charter schools here. And they focus as schools of science and math, schools of technology. And of course, a lot of Americans want to see that as well. That's where the high paying jobs are. But he sees it as a tool of global caliphate. And he's brought here to the United States by people in the government who wanted to have a Islamic extremist opposition in the same way that we have now seen the mainstream media finally admit that it was the U.S. that was arming ISIS up until this last summer. So I want to get back to Sibel Edmonds. You were laying down the history of Fethullah Gulen, how he came here, how we needed the enemy that radical Islam could provide.
Yes. So he was indicted. And through our CIA operatives in 1998, per Bill Clinton's directive, this is U.S. Embassy, U.S. Consulate, military attaché. That's back then we mostly placed our CIA operatives within these institutions, embassies and consulates, etc. By the way, that has changed. Now, since 2001, these CIA operatives are placed with various NGOs, and number one NGOs around the world that are used for this CIA operative placements are two. One is George Soros networks of organizations around the globe. The other one happens to be Gulen Network. Again, Gulen Network is much higher than George Soros. $50+ billion net worth of all these front NGOs and foundations, etc., all over the world.
That's why it's so important to get this story out, because so many of our listeners, people who follow InfoWars or NewsBud, they know about Soros, especially those who follow InfoWars and other, that's very well known in conservative circles, but nobody basically has heard about Gulen. Came up during the issues with General Flynn and others, which we'll get into in a moment, but continue on with him coming to the United States, how he got into the United
States. Right. So we put him, and when I say we, thank God, I was not one of those people, but our CIA operatives, they put this man, this cleric, this wanted cleric, the one who has been in, had been indicted, into on a Gulfstream plane, and this is a CIA plane, and they flew him into the United States. Initially, during the first couple of years, they gave him this nice mansion housing right next to Langley in McLean, Virginia. It was him, and there was a guy from Xinjiang area of China. It's referred to as Turkestan. He's another radical Islamist. His name is Yusuf Turani. So we brought these both radical, most wanted guys into the United States. We gave him some seed money, and the CIA basically said, okay, now you are going to expand and run these NGOs, front NGOs that are cover for terrorist activities to target Russia, to target certain Central Asian countries that are siding with Russia, places in the Middle East. And we use your NGOs and this money to basically implement those covert operations. Then by 2002, so he settled, he built this major big castle compound in Pennsylvania, and this is Fethullah Gulen, this radical cleric. And in 2002, the network for Gulen came up with this new methods of money laundering. They said, okay, we have madrasas. These are radical Islamic madrasas around the globe, but we want to run schools in the United States. And because they couldn't go overtly get money, our tax money from Congress to implement terror operations, this was a perfect plan because they would have legitimized charter school chains. And by the way, it's close to $1 billion per year, David. It's not half a billion. It's $850 to $900 million in U.S. tax money.
I know it was growing rapidly. I got that half billion dollars figure when I first started doing this report on Killing Ed with Mark Hall. And I knew that since then that had several schools here in Texas, quite a few. And so it is growing extremely rapidly. Is it the largest now that we have in terms of charter school networks in the United States? Or
it is the largest chain operating charter schools in dozens of states. Their biggest presence is in Texas. That's why NewsBud and the crew, we all came to Texas, because they have pocketed more politicians in Texas as far as the states go than anywhere else. In our national capital, in the House and Senate, they have pocketed many, many, many people. One of their top pocketed politicians in this nation's capital is, for example, this woman, Jan Schakowsky. He is from Illinois. She's a representative from Chicago. Chicago, and also her husband, who is a convicted felon, by the way, Robert Creamer. He is referred to as Bob Creamer, and this is the convicted felon who visited Obama's White House over 200 times covertly, and that was leaked because they didn't want those to appear on the logs. I don't want to get distracted, but he then expanded these schools, and this is how they are using it for money laundering, among other things, these charter schools in the United States. They bring in 60% of their teachers from other countries, mostly from Turkey, okay? And let's say they make a contract, they say, we're going to give you $3,000 paycheck per month, okay? And this is an arbitrary number, I'm just throwing the number there. But on the side, what we want you to do, we want you to take $1,500 of that out of your paycheck, use it, use your own checkbook, and write a check for $1,500 for our NGO/terror organizations in Indonesia, you know, in Syria, in Yemen, in various countries in Africa. So while on the books, U.S. books, it is shown that he's spending, let's say, $800 million on salaries for the teachers, which we pay taxpayers, that amount actually is less than $400 million per year. The rest of it is being laundered because they threaten these foreign teachers. They threaten their families back in their home countries, especially in Turkey. And basically, they are extorting money from them, the U.S. taxpayers. Money. So these teachers actually are not getting that $3,000 that are shown in our books, let's say for state of Texas, saying, here, we can show you the expenditures by these charter schools. Well, that's not the actual expenditure. But
Mark Hall documented that with whistleblowers in his documentary, Killing Ed, where he's talking about how charter schools can go bad. And they also, and I would add, they come in here on visas saying they can't find American teachers to teach science and math, so they have to bring in teachers from Turkey. American teachers were amazed to see some of the salaries that these individuals are making and saying they're not really qualified to teach this subject they came in. But the whole point is, and we've had some of these individuals that you just laid out what happens with them, go on record with Mark Hall and Killing Ed to talk about how they were forced to do a kickback. That's where the money laundering comes in.
Absolutely. And we are not looking at peanuts here. We are looking at, as you mentioned, that number, in this case, $500 million. So when before we came to Texas as NewsBud,
Before you get to that, before we start talking about the Texas trip, we got to take a quick break. We're going to be right back with Sybelle Edmonds, of course, the news director, editor, founder of NewsBud.com. We're going to talk about the trip that they just took here in Texas, trying to go around, trying to get some answers from some Texas politicians. This is a massive network of charter schools, biggest here in Texas of any of the states. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're talking to Sybelle Edmonds. And Sybelle, I'm going to just turn this over to you real quickly, because I know we've got a lot of points to make about this individual, Fethullah Gulen, somebody that Americans should know about. Americans know about George Soros, but they don't know about a much bigger network, because he's been much more crafty in terms of keeping it secret, keeping it hidden. So we were just talking about what was happening here with the charter schools, how they had turned into money laundering bringing people in with a visa, saying that we need teachers that we can't find here in the United States, then paying them massive salaries and then being forced to kick that back with blackmail, with threats to their family back in Turkey. We've had many people come forward and talk about that. But go ahead, take this where you want to go. We've got one more segment left.
Sure. And I want to start by saying that this issue is not a partisan issue, by the way. I started exposing Fethullah Gulen in 2008, and U.S. media, not only mainstream, but the alternative media outlets, many of them were covering it up. They were blacking it out. So if people go and check out our history at NewsBud, all the articles I have written trying to expose this guy when nobody had heard of his name, Fethullah Gulen, people will find dozens of articles. They would find video shows. And for Texas, that's a good example. We said, you know what? The media, and this is the mainstream media, the liberal media, they are not covering this whole very, very important issue. And they have pocketed more politicians in Texas than elsewhere. Plus, they have the largest number of their charter schools happen to be in Texas. So Texas was the perfect candidate. So David, here is what we did. We made a list of all the pocketed politicians in Texas. And there were many Democrats there, and there were some Republicans there, very nonpartisan. For example, we targeted Lieutenant Governor's office in Texas, and this is Dan Patrick. He's the one who has been preventing a real investigation into Gulen Charter Schools. He's the one who has been blocking investigations, blocking oversight. He's Republican. Well, then we had on our list a bunch of Democrats, many of them, who had taken hundreds of thousands of dollars in gifts, first-class tickets to Turkey. Gulen Networks put them on these planes, first-class tickets, their spouses, their kids. They take them to Turkey. They dine them. They wine them. They put them in five-star resorts. They give them lavish gifts so that they can go back and say, here, allow this charter school in this district, or allow us to get this much more money for this particular school. They've been doing this for more than a decade. Of course, the media hasn't been reporting on this. And we issued press release for the media in Texas, alternative media nationwide, okay? And do you know the only media outlets who gave us a platform to announce this and talk about it was InfoWars. Again, we were very thankful for that. I had that session with Alex Jones. And then suddenly we became the target for these, the most vicious attacks I have seen during my 15 years of whistleblowing journey, calling me the damn ripcogs and BITCH and a whore, being there in Texas and I was showing my true color, being a rip. Ugliest emails, hundreds of them that I have ever seen. We do not accept any advertisements on our site, so we don't get a single corporate ads on our site. We do not get any foundation money, whether it's Soros or Rockefeller Foundation. Our site is 100% funded by people's donation and their subscription. Nothing else. There is nothing else, and it's open for anyone to see. And InfoWars gave us the platform, and we were so thankful for it. But
That's the only way the stuff gets out is if you're independently funded. You know, you take donations, we sell the products that we have here. Everybody else is tied into this uni-party establishment in some way or the other. You know, when I reported on
all from the left, and that is the part that is just, I was flabbergasted because, look, we went to Dan Patrick's office and we did the same thing. We said, why don't we find a few clean politicians in Texas who have been demanding investigations, right, on these charter schools, who have been demanding accountability. David, we combed through all the Texas politicians list, okay, elected officials. We only found one man, one lone man, who has been consistent, standing up for oversight, asking for investigation, and basically representing the best interests of the Texans, right? And
who was that? Let's give him credit for that. Who was it? Sorry? And what was his name?
This congressman happens to be Republican. He's the only one we found. There hasn't been a single congressman or congresswoman who has had the guts to publicly say what's going on, the money laundering, the need for investigation. That congressman.
And who was this guy, so we can give him a shout out? What was the name of the congressman, so we can give him a shout out?
Congressman Dan Flynn. Okay. Good. He is from Houston. This is, I believe, his sixth term. He's the only office that gave us an appointment and accepted our interview request, okay? He didn't know if we were leftists or we were rightists. I mean, this is one honest man with an office that is open to the public. Mm-hmm. One of those few left in the country who's an old-timer who says, I'm going to listen to my constituents. I am going to do the right thing. And they had gone, Gulen Network, we are publishing the exclusive interview with Congressman Dan Flynn, Republican, 45 minutes, unedited. People gonna watch, and he's talking the talk, but he's been walking the walk. He's been walking his talk. He's the only one who has been demanding investigation. The Gulen Network people had gone to him several times. He's refusing to receive kickback. I mean, this is the man that I'm going to see that he is reelected. At least I'm going to do my best.
That's right.
Didn't select him because he's a Republican. I looked and I honestly believed that I was going to find dozens of good men and women in the state of Texas who had done the right thing on this issue. Well, I found only one. And that makes me, according to the left, this skinhead, KKK, xenophobic, racist, anti-Islam, repugs, whore. Basically, these are the words the left has been using. And I want to go on record here for all these people who have sending these nasty emails and notes and unbelievable, and say this. Look, the reason I always accept invitations from InfoWars is this. They have had me on during the Bush administration as a whistleblower. I blew the whistle on Bush administration, but also Clinton administration, because the files I exposed had to do with 1990s as well. Okay? They had me on, you guys had me on during the Obama administration, when he was receiving Transparency Award, and he happened to be the only president who ended up jailing whistleblowers, okay? This liberal, progressive, so-called Democrat, right?
Yeah.
Bush administration.
More than everybody else combined, yeah.
Well, and then you had me on during, this is Trump administration. But I tell you what, during the Bush administration, when I was blowing the whistle, I set up National Security Whistleblowers Coalition, the only whistleblowers organization ran by whistleblowers from national security related and law enforcement related agencies. During Bush administration, I had this open invitation from outlets at the time during 2004 to 2008. People like Democracy Now!, Amy Goodman, this Hartman guy. 2008 comes, Obama gets elected, and I start writing articles criticizing him, okay? And criticizing the hypocrisy, saying anti-war movement dies by the liberal progressives when the president who expands the wars happens to be a Democrat, okay?
That's right. They don't want to hear it.
The horrible stuff, jailing whistleblowers, okay, and kill orders with covert drone assassinations, he receives Nobel Peace Prize. When Republicans happen to be fascist, dictator, awful, when a Democrat does, they hand this pendejo Nobel Peace Prize, okay? These NGOs in D.C., when he's jailing whistleblowers, the only U.S. president who jailed the whistleblowers, they gave him the Transparency Award, announcing him, declaring him the most transparent president in the history of U.S., which he was the opposite, okay? So please,
you know, Savelle, I had Thomas Drake on. I interviewed him, and he said, it wasn't in the Bush administration that they came after us and tried to put us in jail, the NSA whistleblowers. He said it was the Obama administration.
Yes,
and he went after more journalists and whistleblowers and all the other presidents going back to 1917 and the Espionage Act, using that ancient stuff to go after whistleblowers, than all the rest of them combined. And so I think what we have here is a uniparty surveillance state, and we need to have a nonpartisan response to that oppression, don't we?
Well, David, I tell you what, let me give an example, because this time I'm going to go ahead and throw names. By 2009, they officially, and they actually announced it, banned me and many of my whistleblowers, okay? And again, they were nonpartisan whistleblowers from shows like Amy Goodman, who receives $1.5 million per year from George Soros. People can go and see documentation. Democracy Now! Banned me, my organization, anything I had written, anything I had exposed.
Wow,
places
that's amazing.
Like Daily Coast.
Hang on, we got to take a quick break. We're going to be right back with Savelle Edmonds, David Knight. We'll stay with us. We'll be right back and name a few more names. Back. I'm David Knight, and we have Savelle Edmonds. I wanted to hold her over for one more segment. She was just about ready to name names. She's talking about how the left had embraced her as a whistleblower during the Trump administration, but when Obama became president, she got the cold shoulder. And she's talking specifically about Amy Goodman with Democracy Now!, pointing out they get a $1.5 million grant. That might have had something to do with it. Savelle, go ahead. I'll let you finish. We've just got a short segment here, but I didn't want to cut you off short as you're about to name some names. Go ahead.
Sure, David. People can go and watch this video. It's available on YouTube. This is me receiving First Amendment Award from Newman Foundation, Paul Newman's foundation, with all the Democrats, that woman, Maddow, Rachel Maddow, you know, cheering, saying, that's right, let's get rid of Bush. These are heroes, heroines, Sybil Edmonds. Since 2008, she has had nothing but cuss words for me, okay? Whether it's through Twitter, whether it's, that and Amy Goodman, Tom Hartman, the sites, for example, not only they banned me or anything about me, but anything about whistleblowers during Obama administration has been Daily Kos, Huffington Post. Anyhow, the whole thing is this issue is nonpartisan. It's so sad to see the nation so polarized and so ignorant. And for the mainstream media and most of the 90% of the well-funded so-called, I call them pseudo-alternative media outlets, they are generously funded by people like George Soros, by foundations like Rockefeller Foundation, Carnegie Foundations, Hewlett-Packard Foundation. So they have this dominance over the news. We went to Texas and we promised, we pledged, we said, with your support, grassroots support, we want to come back. We want to unseat this man who has abdicated his oath, his responsibility to his constituents. And that's Dan Patrick. This lieutenant governor, we need to unseat him and say, we the people can do that. You know, we the people can do that. And to praise and reelect men like men and women like Dan Flynn, who has been doing the right thing, even though he's been suffering the consequences. We're going to be publishing our exclusive interview with Congressman Dan Flynn. And then there are other Democrats. And I don't even understand the network of ULAN. They have even pocketed the unions, because you would think these Democrats who are supported by unions would say 60% of the teachers are coming from Turkey. Where the heck is union? I mean, they're usually out there like mobs, and then they say, oh, the job shouldn't go to the foreigners, but even they have been pocketed. You go and look at those Democrats, you look at this woman, we have her name published there, Alma, if you're watching, you received hundreds of thousands of dollars from ULAN Network. You haven't been investigated by the Ethics Committee. They dropped the ball on that, and you're receiving union support. I don't understand it, David. I don't get it.
Well, the key thing here is that
some from other countries, what happened to the liberal unions on this?
Well, you know, the thing is, we have people who understand Soros. And I think one thing that has helped that is that Soros typically just funds people on the left side of the political spectrum. But if you get somebody who's really dangerous, they're going to fund people on both sides, and then they're going to own the establishment. And that's what makes Gulenists much more dangerous, is that they own people on both sides of the political spectrum. And that's why we should be even more aware of that threat, because it is so pervasive and it is at the very top. And I think a lot of people now are starting to wake up to the idea that we have this deep state that is permanent, entrenched, and will purge out anybody that is not part of that club. And they have to understand where this fits into our educational system as well, especially into our educational system.
And we are not powerless, David. The primaries are coming up. They're around March 5th, March 6th. We want to come back to Austin. Hopefully this time I get to see you in person. But for that, we need your viewer support. We have fundraising. This is going to pay for our camera crew, for our trip to be back in February. And we are going to do our best to unseat several politicians. Doesn't matter whether they are Republicans. And we want to reelect Congressman Dan Flynn, because if he's reelected, he's going to be head of the Education Committee. And that's
very important to support the good people and understand where this is going. We're out of time, Sybil. Thank you so much for joining us. And again, you can find her at newsbud.com. Thank you so much, Sybil.
Thank you.
Now is Matt Bracken. We've got the guest line up here as part of our 34-hour broadcast. And, of course, Matt is no stranger to those of you who listen to InfoWars. He has a very interesting, a lot of experience as somebody who's been in the military as a Navy SEAL. Of course, he's the author of a very interesting series of books, Enemies Foreign and Domestic, and he's now taken that in a new direction with a new series that is book number two came out this last summer. He had a tweet this morning, someday, maybe, Conservatism Incorporated will notice. Maybe. No wonder we're losing the culture war. Our side puts who you know and connections above just about any other consideration. Not in this club, not welcome. And he's talking about the fact that he has massive 4.9-star reviews to 5-star reviews on all the books that he's written. Very little notice I put out. Well, I've noticed you, Matt, and we're very interested to hear what Matt has to say. And right now we've got Andrew McCabe and closed-door grillings from House lawmakers. We're not allowed to see what this is right now because it's all secret. You are not allowed to know what your representatives are asking. We need to get some transparency in this, but I think Matt's going to bring us some transparency. You can find him, enemiesforeignanddomestic.com, also on Twitter, at MattBracken48. Thank you for joining us, Matt.
Thank you, David.
Tell us, one of the things that we've got from you is a big org chart of the deep state coup. You've got up at the top here, I'm going to need a bigger chart. I think it keeps getting bigger all the time, doesn't it? Break that down a little bit for us.
You can't tell the players without a program.
That's right.
I think it's just a stream of like a Twitter feed of names. It just becomes a blur in most people's minds. And putting all of the faces and connections on one master chart really shows what a tight team this is. All of their connections, how all of these guys have worked for each other in the past.
Yeah, it's like a Dickens novel, isn't it? I mean, where all these characters are interconnected. As somebody who's written a novel, I mean, you know that you got to have like a storyboard. You got to have the relationships of the characters there. These are starting to come in. You've got a great graphic here breaking this down. More coup plotters exposed. It keeps growing.
Right. And the guy yesterday, I was shocked that in the mainstream media, this didn't get any mention at all. Bruce Orr, the guy who was whose wife works for Fusion GPS, who is also a former, air quotes, CIA officer, you know, Russian expert. He didn't show up to Congress yesterday,
and I can only
presume. I can only presume that as a smaller player in the chain of command, the higher ups like Mueller, Rosenstein, and McCabe told him, "You're not showing up," because he might have said something, you know, off the script, and blown the whole thing. He could have turned out to be the the John Dean or the fellow that disclosed the tapes for Watergate, his name.
But, that's right. Or he could have been the guy that said something. They flip him to get the bigger guys, or as you point out, just make an admission that was a blockbuster. It's like, oh, did I say that?
Right. Whereas McCabe is a pro. He's like a Soviet apparatchik. He's like one of these old Soviets, or say Baghdad Bob back during Desert Storm, that can say, you know, the sky is blue. And then 10 minutes later, say the sky is green, and, you know, propose both of them with equal sincerity. You know, McCabe is a professional liar. He's a Democrat operative. His wife got over $700,000 from the DNC for her failed run for a state office in Virginia. And I'm pretty sure that in Virginia, you don't have to give the money back. So what you don't spend on your election run, you just put in your pocket.
And that was while her husband, Andrew McCabe, was supposedly investigating Hillary Clinton. His wife is running for Senate, getting big Democrat money from the DNC, from Terry McAuliffe and others. Terry McAuliffe, of course, former head of the DNC, and probably, I guess, officially adopted into the Clinton crime family. He's one of the DeCapos there.
Yeah, and he failed to disclose this. You know, he's a senior FBI person. I mean, senior. And he forgot to mention the $700,000 to his wife, you know,
just
kind of like community property. I'm sure if they fly to Hawaii for a long vacation and they use her money, he won't go on that trip. You know, it's a joke. It's so corrupt. And at least three of the, digging a little deeper, and this is my theory because I've heard a lot of theories. Three of the people on my chart, two in the top four, which would be Rosenstein and Mueller, and just below Mueller, Weissman, they all have criminal culpability for approving Uranium One and then hiding it from Congress. So to me, This gives them motive to take out Trump. And, you know, that when people say, well, Rosenstein, we don't understand his passivity, I consider that he's a part of the plot. And I would look deeply into who exactly proposed Rosenstein to Trump when Trump was just getting on board, a new guy, and he doesn't know who to, you know, now that Sessions is recusing himself, who do we put in as an acting AG? Whoever whispered in Trump's ear, oh, this Rod Rosenstein, he's just perfect.
Yeah.
You know, he's got great credentials.
And, that's a good point.
You know, he'll be easily, and this is the key, he'll be easily confirmed. You know, that's like a deep state guy telling Trump, put a deep state Judas, a Brutus, in as your deputy AG. Rosenstein then writes the letter suggesting to Trump that it's time to fire Comey. Then he flips it. And as we know, Comey uses the meeting where this happened to leak it to the New York Times as a pretext for the special counsel. And Comey's admitted this. So
that's right.
Rosenstein wrote the letter asking, you know, suggesting to Trump to fire Comey. What does Trump know? He's not a politician. He's like a week on the job. And then Rosenstein, of all the thousands of people, hundreds at least, that could have taken that job, who does he suggest to be the special counsel? Somebody he's been working for 20 years. Their,
that's right,
their protege-mentor relationship. And Rosenstein and Mueller both helped cover up, you know, approve and then cover up the $145 million uranium deal. To me, this gives them great motive to take out, to kneecap Trump, you know, to disable him or get him impeached. Because if there's ever a truthful, honest investigation going back into Uranium One, Weissman, Rosenstein, and Mueller could go to prison. And
I'm
so sick of everybody saying that Mueller is a white hat. Oh, he's Mr. Honorable.
Yeah.
This guy, according to James Kallstrom, who was a assistant director of FBI, Mueller, early in his tenure, partisanized and politicized the FBI by making it mandatory to do an FBI headquarters tour before being promoted to special agent in charge, which is the boss of a regional field office. Before that, you could remain unpolitical and go all the way through your FBI career out in the hinterland, you know, out in the field offices.
Mm-hmm.
Mueller made it so that you had to come to D.C., kiss the director's ring, you know, swear loyalty to the cardinal, so to speak.
Yeah, get only baptized into the swamp. Yeah,
and this turns all of the field office sacks into swamp creatures, mm-hmm, further politicizing the FBI from one end to the other. Mueller also, early in his tenure, he threw out the realistic counter-jihad training that had been being used, you know, by patriots warning about the seriousness of the jihad threat. He literally not only had those training manuals banned and tossed out, they couldn't even use words like jihad in emails. The FBI couldn't. He literally brought in CARE, Council of American Islamic Relations, a Hamas front group, as already an unindicted co-conspirator in the Holy Land Foundation case. He brought those guys in to steer FBI jihad training.
Kind of like H.R. McMaster saying, we're not going to talk about radical Islamic terrorism. Yeah, political correctness and a total political corruption of the FBI. And as you point out, they've got their neck in the noose. This is not just political bias, folks. These are people who have committed crimes with Hillary Clinton and covered them up, going back to Uranium One and other issues with the Clinton Foundation. Great intelligence from Matt Bracken. We'll be right back with Matt. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're talking to Matt Bracken. He has a great deep state coup trap graphic that he's put together here with all these players, because it is an interconnected web, but it's got a lot of players in here. So he's got these people listed down here as Comey, the leaker, Mueller, the mule, Rosenstein, the tool, Andrew Weissman, the hatchet man, Peter Strzok, the assassin, and, of course, his attorney mistress, the FBI slut. So You want to take a look at this. This is on his Twitter account. Make this thing go viral. And, of course, you can find Matt on Twitter at Matt Bracken 48, M-A-T-T-B-R-A-C-K-E-N 48. Take a look at this org chart that he's laid out there. He's on fire breaking down these relations and pointing out that this isn't just political bias of people who, well, they like big government, they like globalism, they like a big Washington government. Though these are people who are involved in crimes, who have been covering up crimes for Hillary Clinton for a long time. The Clinton Foundation, Uranium One, other issues, they've been there for a long time. They've got skin in this game. And that's one of the reasons why they are so dangerous, aren't they, Matt?
Yeah, there's no doubt there is an actual war going on right now.
Yes.
At this point, it's a covert political bureaucratic war, but there's a war going on. Just for today, you know, with McCabe giving testimony behind closed doors, I would say that, you know, guys like Jim Jordan or the White Hats on that committee, the war, the Civil War line even goes through that committee on partisan lines. Adam Schiff is a black hat on the other side. Mm-hmm. Conservative Treehouse, which is a great website. It's a little hard to follow because of the layout's a little bit odd. But the Last Refuge is the guy that runs Conservative Treehouse. He has a great theory that he put out a few days ago that it seems to be very cogent to me, that there's a counterintelligence operation going on, possibly being led by Sessions. Rosenstein may be in on it. Rosenstein may, a lot of these guys may flip depending on which way they see the coup playing out. Nobody wants to be on the losing side, led away in handcuffs. And there's an old saying, none dare call it treason. What's the reason? For if it prosper, I just blew that quote. But basically, if the coup wins, everybody's going to be on the side of the coup. And I always was on the side of the coup.
That's
if
right.
The coup
yeah.
fails, I was always a plant inside of it. I was always working against it. Mm-hmm. So right now, the Schiff, who's the big leaker, the Conservative Treehouse article posits that the famous WikiLeaks email about the date of the 4th or the 14th, the way that it was leaked by multiple sources at once, they think that Schiff was fed intentional false information, that Schiff was given a doctored email with the 4th on it, to see, like a radioisotope, where that would flow. And the false information then flowed straight to CNN and, you know, a couple of other, you know, reliable Schiff leak targets, leak destinations. So there, that seems to show that there is some life fighting within a part of the Department of Justice called the White Hats, loosely called the White Hats, that are fighting the deep state black hats. So this is an all-out, you know, war to the finish that's going on right now, and we haven't seen the end of it. But I think that the tide has turned against Mueller and the coup plotters. Even on like MSNBC and CNN, they're at least talking about Peter Strzok. They were just pretending that those text messages never even occurred. So they've
and we're looking at less than 4% of the messages going back and forth between Strzok and his attorney mistress, as he pointed out. But we're looking at only 375. I don't know that the Congress has seen more than 375. And those are dynamite emails. I don't think they cherry pick those. I think there's probably a lot more in there that we haven't seen.
That's right. And I think that now that the coup plotters do understand that there's a counterattack against the coup with this counterintelligence leak tracing plan happening, which I believe is what that December 4th, 14th WikiLeaks email was about. That was to track the leakers. So they know that the coup could fail. If the coup fails, they don't want to go down with the ship. I've heard a rumor that Bill Priestep, he's the guy between McCabe and Strzok. I would almost bet that he was in that Andy's office meeting where they were talking about, you know, the Trump insurance. But I've heard, and it's just a rumor, that Bill Priestep is turning John Dean, and he's, you know, spilling his guts. But we don't know, but all of the guys on that coup plot have to now look at each other and wonder, who's the John Dean? Who's the G. Gordon Liddy? Who's going to wind up in Fort Marcy Park? Mm-hmm. You know, who's going to prison?
That's
so
right.
It's a serious time for these guys where they have to do a gut check and wonder if they're going to go down with just to save Mueller, Rosenstein, and and Weissman from going to prison for Uranium One, you're going to go to prison with him for taking part in this coup?
I mean, you know, Ray Rosenstein, when he was there, the way he just deflected, very arrogant, the way he deflected the questions from Trey Gowdy, from Jim Jordan. I mean, they were laying it out there, and he's like, eh, I can't say anything about it. I won't say anything. I mean, just setting it out there, cool on the line, and we know that's what Andrew McCabe is doing right now, too. I mean, he's a Jedi master. You know, these are not the droids you're looking for, as you're pointing out. You know, I mean, these are guys, as you said, the first segment, they are accomplished liars. That's how they got to where they are. They know how to deflect this criticism and to spin reality, don't they?
I saw a fabulous YouTube video by a woman. Her name escapes me. She does body. She's a forensic body language interpreter. And she looked at the Rosenstein testimony. Every time he got a hard question about, say, did the FBI pay for the dossier, he's like looking down to the right, shuffling papers, looking out of the corners. He's doing every tell. I don't think he's as slick as Andy McCabe. Rosenstein was doing every tell. I'm lying. Yeah. I'm scared. Don't ask me that again.
That's funny. Well, you know, the whole thing falls apart, has been falling apart because of this dossier, which is at the very center of this. Once it came out that this was financed by the DNC and so forth, and this was, we're going to find out, get it confirmed that this was the basis for the search warrant. Well, they did get the search warrant. Alan Dershowitz has come out and said, well, why didn't Mueller get a search warrant for these other things? It's a piece of cake to get that. All you have to do is just walk in and say, I want it. That's the arrogance of these people, too. I think that's going to be a big part of their downfall is their arrogance.
But this was before the election when they got the FISA warrant. And on my coup chart, there's a block left for a judge who just recused himself over the Flynn guilty plea, which is only Section 1001 lying to the FBI. Remember, folks, if they already have your emails, which we know they did, and then the FBI interviews you and they say, "Did you meet so and so last Monday?" But they know from your email it was Tuesday. And you say, yeah, because your memory's a little bit hazy. You just lied to the FBI, and they can crucify you for that. And that's what they do. That's what basically happened to Papadosky, that guy.
That's right. And you don't even have to be under oath, as I pointed out, for this violation of 1001. It could have been a very informal conversation that Michael Flynn didn't, and they got him on some kind of a detail like that. That's the way these guys roll. But I tell you what, that's amazing information, Matt. Thanks for breaking that down for us. Again, you can find Matt at enemiesforeignanddomestic.com. Take a look at his books. Great series of books. You'll find them on Amazon, other places. You can find them at enemiesforeignanddomestic.com. Also on Twitter, you can find that great org chart, Matt Bracken 48 on Twitter. Thank you so much for joining us, Matt Bracken.
Thank you. We'll be
right back with Roger Stone. Stay with us.
Waging information warfare against pushers of fake news. You're listening to Real News with David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're here with Roger Stone, joining us here live in the studio. I was just talking to Matt Bracken. He's got a great graphic that he's put together of the deep state coup trap. He's got all the characters there, like a board when you see them on a novel, setting up all the different people trying to figure out a relationship in a novel, or if you're talking about trying to solve a crime, and we're trying to solve a crime. So you can find that on his Twitter account. But, you know, talking to him about this and how similar that is to a book, there was a piece from Vanity Fair that I know that you want to talk about where they were saying that you've got a book that you're working on about the downfall of Donald Trump.
Yeah, I'm glad to have the opportunity to correct this. Gabe Sherman is a very good reporter. We had a very brief conversation, but that piece is extraordinarily overwritten. What I said to Gabe was, first of all, I am a New York Times bestselling author. I have written 5 books. I am working on a 6th book. What I said to Mr. Sherman was that if things proceeded as I fear they may, that Mueller does not clear the president, that the president's lawyers are either naive or they are lulling him into a false sense of security, false sense of the stakes here, and Mueller indicts the president on some process-related charge, perjury.
Or financial crime somewhere.
Or alternatively, if Mueller's public credibility is so eroded that he is unable to pull that off, and we may be headed there,
mm-hmm.
well, then I believe that the political establishment will try a 25th Amendment coup to remove the president based on this nonsense that he's non compos mentis. And that if that happened, I would write a book, and the title of the book would be The Unmaking of the President. Now, my last book was The Making of the President 2016. This could theoretically, if what I fear could come to pass does, be The Unmaking of the President 2017 or 2018. We don't know. Now, there's also, as you know, I'm riffing off of The Unmaking of the Mayor, William F. Buckley's famous book.
Sure.
But the Vanity Fair piece said that I was writing a book entitled The Downfall of Donald Trump. I never used those words in the interview. To their credit, they very quickly corrected the story and said that if I wrote this book, which is at this point completely hypothetical. So I said at the end, look, this is a book I hope I don't have to write. But having lived through the 1974 coup d'etat,
mm-hmm.
And the analogies are extraordinary, I see the framework for a book. In my book, the part of Al Haig, General Al Haig, is played by General Mike Kelly. So I'm glad to have that opportunity because I think a lot of Trump supporters said, what, Roger Stone thinks the president is going down? That's not what I said. Mm-hmm. What I said is I think the president is threatened. I say these things out of concern for him and loyalty to his presidency.
Mm-hmm.
I really think that he has surrounded himself with these establishment Republicans who just aren't being candid with him about the gravity. I was quoted saying how bad things are, but I mean the gravity of the political situation. I did not mean to imply that the president has done anything wrong. Now, let's play this out, if we may. I believe that the clucking tongues in Washington have been saying for weeks, Mueller has a shock and awe moment for the president right after the first. So you have the guilty plea of General Flynn. Somebody instructed General Flynn to set up this meeting with the Russian ambassador, a perfectly legal phone call, a legal, you know, action. And if it was not the president, perhaps it was the president's son-in-law who's on the White House staff and who would have authority in this area. But he's been interviewed for hours by the Senate and House Intelligence Committees and by the FBI. So my concern is that he may have perjured himself about this.
Mm-hmm.
Again, a process crime.
That's what they're after.
And therefore, the shock and awe could be the indictment of a member of the first family.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the president will stand for this. The president left the door open to pardoning General Flynn. But I think long before they get to the president, there will be other indictments. Perhaps the president's son-in-law, who, by the way, I don't think has done anything wrong. And I think that's the next shoe to drop after the first of the year, maybe even sooner.
And I think what people don't realize is that looking at General Flynn, we know the guy that deposed him here was out to get the president. And most people don't realize that when you get convicted of lying to the FBI, it doesn't mean that you're in some kind of a formal hearing. It doesn't mean you're not under oath or anything. It's just you happen to make a comment to them and off the record about any kind of detail. And if you don't have that exactly right, they can say, not just to the FBI, any federal agent, we got you under section 1001 or whatever. I mean, it's a travesty that we even have a law that is that easy to entrap people with.
Well, particularly in view of the fact that there was illegal surveillance of General Flynn.
Combine it with
so that. We know all of his business. Now we make up a list of questions based on all the conversations they heard, and they just wait. They ask him all these questions. They wait until he trips on one of them inadvertently.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have a lawyer present when this happens. Pulling a stunt like the Manafort raid, they raided his office at 8 o'clock in the morning. He was there by himself.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't two agents. It was an entire detail. It was meant to intimidate.
That's right.
So I think he was essentially entrapped.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he only pled guilty when the president's lawyers threw him over the side. I think he's stunned by this. He is still loyal to the Trump administration, And I think that, you know, we don't know who he's going to point the finger at. But I would say this. It never made sense to me that he lied to the vice president. Never made sense to me that he lied to the FBI. He's not a political man. He wouldn't be thinking about the political implications. And there's no reason to lie about perfectly legal activities.
Right.
Unless he was told very specifically by whoever instructed him to set up this meeting, tell no one.
Mm-hmm.
The president doesn't want you to tell. He's approved this, but he doesn't want you to tell anyone.
So somebody set him up.
Nothing. Well, either that or it was inadvertent. There's no reason to lie mm-hmm. to the vice president unless somebody had instructed him to tell no one.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's an honest man, and therefore this has never made much sense to me. Why would you lie about an underlying action that's perfectly legal?
And, you know, going back to July when that meeting with Hillary Clinton was scheduled to come up over the 4th of July, and then there was a tarmac meeting between Bill and Loretta Lynch. When I saw that, Hillary had already made the comment, you know, you got to be very careful what you say to the FBI, because that can be the most important, most serious crime that you can commit, is telling them something that they don't. So I always felt, just my own personal opinion, they were getting together to discuss, well, what do they know? What are the questions going to be to make sure she didn't fall into that in case there was somebody there that wasn't in her clique of people that was going to cover for her. That's what I always felt at the time.
But it just seems extraordinary that Donald Trump Jr. spends 9 hours being questioned, and there's no underlying crime there.
That's right.
Either.
That's right.
His
right.
communications with WikiLeaks are perfectly legal. Hillary Clinton spends less than an hour being questioned about her emails.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
it's a perfect example of the preferential treatment that the Mueller gang gave mm-hmm. Hillary Clinton.
And no transcript. And I'm sure, you know, they probably didn't have anybody there that would have called her on a perjury charge anyway or lying to the FBI.
So to clarify, my next book is entitled Stone's Rules, and it's the rules for life, for politics, for food, fashion, film, living. It's just a list of maxims of things I've learned in a 40-year career in American politics.
A little bit freer and not as cynical as Saul Alinsky's rules for radicals, right?
Well,
it's just rules for life.
There will be rules to how to win in there, but I have to turn that in January 1st for a late February publication date.
That's great. Well, you know, we see these things. Like, I'm sure somebody's going to write a book about what's going on with this deep state coup trap. And it's going to be much more interesting than all the rehashes that are being done of the Watergate era of the Washington Post are being done by Clooney, by Spielberg, and all these people living in the past. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about how the past doesn't really give us an exact clue as to what the future is going to hold. And this, we'll be right back with Roger Stone. I'm David Knight. Welcome back. I'm David Knight. Here in the studio with me is Roger Stone. And we're going to talk about Me 2.0 because they're coming back after President Trump again. These same accusers. We got the makeup artist who we now see that very clearly that she was making this up. Also is Lisa Bloom and Gloria Allred. But before we get back to that and to Roger, I just want to remind you of some of the specials that we have as part of our massive Christmas savings at InfoWarsStore.com. We have 50% off our brand new products, CellForce and Alpha Power. We have 50% off Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink, our multivitamin formula, Knockout, our all-natural sleep aid, Survival Shield, X2 Nascent Iodine, Super Male Vitality, Prostaguard, all those, 50% off. And we have massive discounts on Brain Force, Silver Bullet, that's our colloidal silver product, as well as InfoWars Life Select Survival Foods that have a shelf life of 25 years, all made in America, non-GMO, great package. You can reseal this stuff once you open it. It'll stay sealed and good for 25 years. But even after you open it up, many years after this, you can seal it back up and use it for a few more days. So all of that is on sale. You'll see that at InfoWarsStore.com. And this is the last day for a guaranteed shipment before Christmas, for Christmas arrival. So, Roger, let's talk about what's going on with these women coming back, all surfacing back up again. And now we have a couple of things that have come out in The Hill, certainly not a Trump-friendly publication, talking about the makeup artist lobbied to be Trump's makeup person before the campaign, then accused him of having molested her in the past. We have the revelations of Lisa Bloom, who is the daughter of Gloria Allred, saying, and these revelations, The Hill did an exclusive going down deep, looking at the documents showing that she was offering to pay people as much as $750,000 to come after President Trump. This is pretty amazing. And now Franken has got his supporters out there like Joe Manchin saying, we want you to stay in the Senate. Don't resign.
You know, I think it's important to have some context, David. The Clintons understood from the beginning that Hillary needed a disproportionate number of women's votes to win.
Mm-hmm.
They also knew that Bill Clinton's epic abuse of women and Hillary's role in silencing him was her greatest vulnerability.
Your book, The War on Women, yeah.
So I believe, and then we learned from a whistleblower, that the Clintons thought the way to cancel out Bill's misbehavior was to trump up phony allegations against Trump so that they could at a minimum say, well, maybe Bill's had his problems, but Trump's just as bad or worse.
Mm-hmm.
So we knew that this was a propped up phony operation. We actually had a whistleblower come and warn us. He wanted a substantial amount of money for more specifics, and we weren't willing to pay blood money. But he warned us that there would be women making these allegations, and he warned us that the Clintons were paying for us. For it, and he warned us that it was all fraudulent. So we knew it was coming.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll remember, just before the election, one of the star witnesses against Trump actually scheduled a press conference and didn't show up for it. And then it all kind of collapsed after that.
And even the dirty dossier. I mean, when you look at that, that was like a twofer. You know, there you got the Russian stuff, the connection, as well as women and so forth. So that was all part of the big smear plan that they had.
Look, I think this is the brainchild of Sidney Blumenthal. Sidney Blumenthal, you know, thinks he's Ted Sorensen, but he's really Al Capone. And the Clintons falsified this meme against Trump. And then, as Alex Jones pointed out, when Harvey Weinstein went down, they saw an opening to recycle the same old garbage. I don't think these women can stand up to scrutiny at the end of the day. And now you have Bloom, the daughter of Allred, out soliciting money to pay these women. And as you point out, in one case, as much as $750,000.
Yeah.
I must say this, looking at the women at that press conference, let's just say none of them seem to me to be Donald Trump's type.
Well, you know, what's interesting, talking about Gloria Allred, the pattern of behavior that we saw with Donald Trump as well as with Roy Moore, same pattern of behavior, some allegations come out. And to give weight to those allegations, she surfaces with somebody that then is exposed as being fraudulent. In the case of President Trump, it was Summer Zervos,
right,
who they then found an email from her a few months earlier begging him to come, just as this makeup artist was doing, begging him to come and do a promotion with her to promote what she was doing at the time. And so that got pushed down, just as we saw with the accusations of Gloria Allred and Beverly Young Nelson coming after Roy Moore. She had a yearbook, which is an obvious forgery. They lied about the signatures there. And it was deconstructed by employees who worked at that restaurant and so forth. But then in both cases, after Gloria Allred's client has been exposed as a fraud, as a poser, and Gloria herself, she comes back with both of these clients, now Summer Zervos, with a defamation lawsuit, and is going to do the same thing with Roy Moore after she fronted this forgery of a yearbook. Now she's going to sue Roy Moore for defamation.
Well, and I think it's important to review this. We broke the story about Al Franken's sexual harassment accuser, Lee Ann Tweeden, on InfoWars, roughly 6 hours before the mainstream media. I called Rob Dew. Rob Dew posted it. We were out there first. About the same time, Big Leagues Politics, a very fine website, also reported it. That somehow gets transposed to, well, because Stone had a heads up about this, he orchestrated it.
Yeah.
The out-of-work comedian Tom Arnold, who I guess is trying to boost his ticket sales for his stand-up routine at the Comedy Store on Sunset Boulevard.
Says, oh, he's still working? I didn't know he was working.
He says, he barely. He says, and I quote, Roger Stone coached Lee Ann Tweeden. Let's be very clear. I've never met the woman. I've never spoken to her. I've never communicated with her. I've never talked to anyone who works for her or with her.
Mm-hmm. So and Arnold has no information to the contrary.
Well, he says that he promised to post proof. I'm still waiting. He posted some email to and from some Russian email address that has nothing whatsoever to do with me. This is very important because now Richard Painter, who is the ethics lawyer in the Bush White House, has come forward, as did the governor of Minnesota, Arne Carlson, and say, Franken should not resign. He should wait until we have due process and a full investigation by the Senate, particularly the role of Roger Stone. So here's my new position. I agree with them. We need to have hearings, and everyone needs to be under oath.
That's right.
I'm happy to go first.
Yeah, and make it public this
and
time.
I will explain exactly what I did, which was merely to report this on behalf of InfoWars. That's not orchestration. That's not involvement. I didn't make this happen. P.S., six other women have come forward to accuse Franken. So, but this is, you know, I think it was Benjamin Franklin who said, a lie is halfway around the world before the truth gets its pants on.
Or maybe before Al Franken gets his pants on, right?
That may be. But Richard Painter is, this man's obsessed looking at his Twitter feed. But let me say this to Dick Painter. My only involvement is in reporting this as a journalist. If you have some information to the contrary, make it public. But put up or shut up.
You know, I think there was some intrigue here. And as pointed out to you during the break, I put up a poll the day that Al Franken had his speech, his non-resignation speech, where he said, coming up in some days, I'm going to resign. But of course, all the women are lying about me. I don't remember this. Right. Some of what they said, I dispute what the rest of them said. But you need to look at Roy Moore and you need to look at Donald Trump, you know, and then said, well, I'll be resigning someday. I didn't believe it at the time. I thought it was a scam. I thought he was waiting to see how the Roy Moore election broke and so forth. And now we see Senator Manchin as well as others coming out in spite of the number of other people who have come out in the interim. Now they're saying, even though we've got more women accusing Al Franken, they're saying, no, please stay, Al.
Well, it's one thing for a crazy out-of-work actor to post insane things on his Twitter feed. But when a member of the bar, a man who's supposed to be knowledgeable, comes forward with that kind of false allegation, what I have done is to swear out an affidavit. This morning I'm going to go to a notary here in Austin and have it notarized. And now it's time for Mr. Painter and others to go under oath. I agree with them. Let's have a full inquiry and we'll find out how this news got into the mainstream.
That'll be very interesting. And as I said before, I hope that this will be public this time. Well, what's up on your agenda? What do you see coming down here with the testimony that we've got of Andrew McKay right now, which is being done in secret? Again, that's not allowed to be seen by the public.
Well, and McCabe has resisted the call of Chairman Nunes to testify for the House Intelligence Committee for a number of weeks, with the arrogance of which is extraordinary. Look, McCabe has multiple conflicts, but the largest one, the one that I think is most interesting, is that Comey, Mueller, McCabe, and Rosenstein himself, who was the supervising U.S. attorney, are all compromised by Uranium One.
That's right.
And they all, I think, committed prosecutable crimes in that cover-up.
And I think that's why they are pushing this so hard. This isn't simply a political difference. This isn't simply, well, we got nice cushy jobs in Washington, we love globalism or whatever. They have got skin in the game because they're a part of that criminal conspiracy. Thank you for joining us, Roger Stone. And that concludes this part of the broadcast. But we have more to come. Stay with us.